You're listening to Around Comics, episode 169. Listening to Around Comics. You already heard that part, but hey, this is Sal, and this is episode 169, and it's the roundtable, and we are joined by Mr. Christopher Niesman.
It's more of a rectangle.
Whatever. And Scotty Young.
What's up?
And Tom Caters is gone.
But here in spirit.
Yeah, what is Tom doing?
Filing taxes.
Oh, that's right. It's
poor accountant.
Already tax season.
Tax season again.
Poor bastard. We're going to do things a little bit wonky tonight. Obviously, already it's a little wonky because I'm doing the introductions, and that's retarded. But
I threw that right on you, right before we started.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, what you doing?
And we're going to do the top of the stack stuff, and then I don't know what else we're going to do yet, but we got some different ideas for today's episode. So
I'm ready to talk 70s movies again.
I got a lot of TV. I watched a lot of TV this week, and movies, and I read some stuff.
Watched a whole season of The Wire.
Season 4, right?
Season 4.
Ah, wasn't it good? We'll get all into that later.
All right. Well, before we go too much further, let's remind everyone that this episode is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
Yes, and InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection for the club, the originals, to Around Comics listeners for an amazing 35% off the cover price. Get your copy today for only $11.69 for the soft cover or $16.22 for the hardcover, which I read on the way to work today, which is, it was darn good.
How long of a ride did you have?
It was a long ride on the Blue Line today. Check out the Eisner Award-winning graphic novel by Dave Gibbons, and then listen to our discussion in early February as we talk about that and Sal's other picks, which your CD is The Misfits.
Static Age.
And your movie is SLC Punk.
Yes.
Which coming from Netflix with me next week. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship for free.
And we'd like to remind everybody that Around Comics is recorded every Friday night at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you. I don't think anybody's coming by tonight. It's fucking cold.
Everybody's doors are frozen solid.
It's cold out.
Very cold tonight. All right. Well, that's pretty much the intro. Mm-hmm. No witty banter. No fucking around. Let's just get to it.
Let's do it.
It's very streamlined. Tom will be so proud of us.
It's time for Top of the Stack.
Top of the stack.
That's right. It's Top of the Stack. Our chance to tell you, the listeners,
what we've been
reading. Tom? Oh, he's not here.
Tom's not here.
Chris, why don't you start us off with Top of the Stack?
What was
your Top of the Stack?
I brought one comic.
Thank you.
One comic.
I had a long conversation
with
Chris this week about...
It's Top of the Stack. It's not the stack.
Yeah.
So the top of my stack... this week is actually one that is came out last month, but I caught up and read the second issue, which I'm not going to talk about. But Resurrection by Mark Guggenheim and David Dumire. And Mark Guggenheim, you may know, worked on Wolverine with Humberto Ramos. He's also one of the three writers that is working on Amazing Spider-Man now. But
right.
This is from Oni Press, and it is kind of a post-apocalyptic look, and he calls it his What Happens Next book. If you can imagine War of the Worlds.
The day after.
Well, not the day after. This is 10 years after.
Oh.
This is after the alien...
invasion?
After the invasion is done and the aliens have mysteriously left, what happens after the invasion is over? And if you can kind of imagine The Walking Dead, kind of the... that is all about what happens after the zombie outbreak and, right. and following those characters. Very similar to that, but it's also, I think, a lot like Why the Last Man are the two books that I probably compare it to the most, in that you have a group of characters, actually several groups of characters, that are trying to figure out how to go on with their lives in this very changed world. But where Walking Dead is that it's one group of people, and you follow that group and see how they interact with each other and grow and change and die sometimes. This has kind of like Why the Last Man, where there are several different groups, and you already kind of have the feeling that these storylines are going to overlap and, and arc together. You've got a group in what is it? Weather Mountain. That's the where the
NORAD.
NORAD. Yeah, exactly. Okay. They've been holed up there for 10 years. So you have kind of the very last remains of, the government and, what they're doing. Then you have a woman that is trying to get back to her home, and she finds a companion along the way. They run into more people. So you have all these different groups of people that are trying to make their way through this world, and it's interesting.
It's, it sounds like a series that came out from Boom not too long ago. A mini series called Second Wave, which was kind of the same. It was like after the World of Worlds. Basically, that's what I think that the whole thing was supposed to be, after War of the Worlds. But then, sort of, there was a second wave of invasion after that. So different in that regard.
And I don't think that is. I think the threat of that is looming. And of course, people are worried about, you know, are they really gone?
Right.
You get they call these aliens bugs, and they're, you know, you get to, that's another one of the storylines,
so
is that
bugs.
There is a bug, which is just a big kind of lanky alien, and his handler, quote unquote, that I guess he was here before the invasion, because apparently he's been on the planet for 25 years, and they've been captured, and they've been trying to get information out of him, and he's obviously knows a lot more than he's letting on. So it's going to be interesting to see how he and the person that he's with, what they do in the story. And yeah, it's got a lot of promise, and Mark Guggenheim has already shown some serious writing chops. It's nice to see him outside of Marvel and doing some independent creator-owned stuff. And as far as the artwork, once again, if you're a Walking Dead fan, I think that it translates pretty well. It's David Dumire,
black and white,
yeah,
grayscaled.
Yep, exactly.
Very Walking Dead-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I would compare it favorably to Charlie Aldred. Is that who does Walking Dead these days? So yeah, so Resurrection. It's on the second issue. I read it this week. It picks right up. Enjoyed it. So if you see that at your local comic shop, you like The Walking Dead, like Why the Last Man, all that post-apocalyptic stuff, could be a book for
why,
you.
It's Why the Last Walking Dead.
Why the Last Walking Dead.
Okay. All right. Well, Scotty, did you have anything you read this week that you liked?
Yeah, I read half of basically the first arc of Punisher Max.
Oh, the
hardcover. So basically half of the first hardcover.
Okay, so the first arc of
Kitchen Irish.
No, that's the second.
That's the second one.
Yeah, I just started that, but I finished the first arc.
Did you like it?
It was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. It was refreshing to read that from him after reading Preacher. You know, like
it's a different.
It seems like there's like he's telling a story, you know, and not just being crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's like a story that he can tell and be crazy, but the Punisher's already done a lot of the work for him, so he doesn't have to. There's none of him.
He's not trying to link nutty scenes together,
yeah,
really. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah. It's pretty good. I mean, I'm interested to see where the rest of the series goes, you know, once I'm getting into it. But it's a strong first little arc, you know, just kind of highlighting the Punisher. And it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I felt the same way about that, because I like Preacher, but that was one of the few Garth Ennis stuff that I ever really enjoyed, because I just felt he's so over the top all the time, mm-hmm. and I never really got, you know, either sexually or weird or violent. It was just always
pushing
gratuitous.
Things.
Yeah. It was always gratuitous. Sure. It wasn't to serve the story. It was always just like, how
I think we should have a scene of an angel and a demon screwing.
Yeah, you know, but Punisher Max, I felt, like you said, he kind of toned it down.
He's telling a story.
Yeah.
I mean, a nicely paced plot. I mean, so much so that, you know, in four issues, the Punisher's sitting in a interrogation room. You know, have most of the arc, and you don't mind, because it's a nice paced story, and there's, you know, you're getting into it. I mean, there's still the one character, the female CIA person or whatever, that's still like, you know, I wonder if he has a big dick. Oh, yeah, I want to hear his voice. It makes him so wet.
Right. It like, just kind of
and that's it. When you're like, you don't fucking need to do that. You're a good writer.
Yeah. That's the frustrating thing.
You're a good writer. Just fucking write.
Right, yeah. That's the frustrating thing about Ennis, because you see that he's a good writer, but it's like he actually gets in his own way
for me.
Like, it's like get out of your comfort zone. You don't have to shock anyone.
You don't have to.
No, I always feel that he will start off in his comfort zone by writing good, and then he feels like, well, maybe people won't like me
if I give them blood and good. Cocks.
It's like Kevin Smith syndrome, right? Where it's like, if I write just a good movie, people might not like it.
Yeah,
it's donkey a, show. Suck the dick of a donkey. I'm so crazy and edgy.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Punisher Max has been one of those books I can say consistently good from issue one to what's going on now. And with Barracuda as a character.
And he definitely has his crazy moments. And there's, especially with Barracuda. Barracuda's
totally over the top.
Yeah, completely
but I'm glad
over the top
it's Barracuda
character.
And not
Don't
Punisher.
Talk about that yet because I'm not
No,
there.
No, no, okay. no. I wasn't going to give in. I'm just saying... He definitely has moments where there's stuff that's very Garth Ennis like, but overall, I think it's been a really good series.
Yeah. He's wrapping up on that. So I'll be sad. It's one that whenever it comes out, I always kind of forget that it's coming out, but whenever it drops and I get in my pull box, I'm always excited, and it's usually the first thing I go home and read.
Yeah, it's a good book.
It's another book that it's after reading it through in the hardcover. It's weird. It's hard for me to understand who could read it in a single
issue.
Yeah, because it's really written as a big story.
It's like a TV show, though.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell that it ends at the end of each issue, but I mean, it's really decompressed stuff.
Well, there's definitely been times where I've had to go back and read, the previous issue, but now I'm ordering all the hardcovers and I'm stopping my single issue. Sickness,
yeah,
as I like to call it.
It is.
I still like it in the single issues.
I can't do it.
One day, I'd like to see them do a Punisher Max omnibus at one point.
I don't like omnibuses.
You don't?
Yeah, they're too much. Hold them and read them.
Yeah.
Just too fucking big. I mean, there's at a point.
I like them though. I just there's something about
you just like putting them on your shelf.
I do.
I
do read them too. But I don't lay in bed and read them.
Yeah,
I have I have like a reading stand,
a Bible holder.
Yeah, Bible holder. But I can sit on the couch and I pull it up to me and I'm able to read it.
What's the last? Speaking of omnibuses, didn't they just announce the new Bendis Daredevil omnibus?
Oh, are they doing?
Yeah,
the Bendis
going to be the entire Bendis run on Daredevil. Lord.
See, the only thing that I'm
now see, I'll take an omnibus like Alias. They put
that's
that omnibus. Yeah, but they didn't do the oversized.
Oh,
it's still book size. I can deal with that better.
Oversized.
I like the artwork for oversized, but it is not. You don't read that. Who the fuck reads a tablet? I feel like fucking Moses walking around talking about.
Well, you like reading in bed when you're.
I like reading in reading spots.
I had my League of Extraordinary Gentlemen absolutely. I did. I felt like Moses.
Yeah, coming down with the fucking commandments.
They look awesome though. I don't know. They hurt my wrist.
They do hurt my wrist. Tunnel.
Yeah,
the goddamn thing up.
Thing is, I can't hide them. They're so big. And usually, the question I get whenever I pull it out, I'm sitting on the couch reading, is from over my shoulder. How much did that cost?
Yeah. My wife doesn't.
Yeah, I'll take like the Alias omnibuses. Like if it's regular size, I'll take that all day. I don't mind it to be collected.
Well, it was the same size as the other omnibuses, wasn't it?
I don't know. I
mean, it was.
If you can find it anymore,
Alias.
Yeah, I think it's slightly oversized.
No,
probably like
much.
This.
Yeah. I mean, like that. I mean, yeah.
Because the omnibus are huge.
Yeah.
I mean, they're
that's what I'm saying. It's
enormous
not like the Invincible
size.
And
right.
Sandman.
Yeah. Well,
the absolute.
They're probably oversized, but they're not.
Yeah,
like, this is a slightly oversized. The Marvel's Premiere Edition, which leads me to my top of the stack, which is the hardcover Marvel Premiere Edition of X-Factor Madrox Multiple Choice. This was the I should take this toothpick out of my mouth. Sorry. Chewing on a
you
Australian...
haven't mastered the talking with the
I'm
pick.
Not quite hillbilly enough. I'm not.
Nah, man. You got to get down on this a little bit.
I haven't been smoking, though.
Was that always called X-Factor Madrox?
No, it was just called Madrox. Okay. Initially, when it came out, it was a 5-issue miniseries from Peter David. And it's basically a noir esque detective story with Jamie Madrix. He has sent out a bunch of his replicants, or whatever you want to call them, his multiples out into the world to learn things. Because if they learn it and then he absorbs them back in, he learns everything. So he sends them all out. That's sort of the backstory of this this story. He had sent a bunch of people out to do different things, and they all kind of have their own personalities. Whenever that was one of the things Peter David kind of recreated mm-hmm. for Jamie Madrix was that whenever he made a duplicate of himself, they would have slight variations in attitude. They would be more singular in their attitude. Like, every one of them would have a part of him, but it would be more focused.
It's not like he's duplicating himself. He's actually taking a part of himself.
Yeah, he's like, this one would be like the asshole Jamie Madrox. You know, it's like,
that's like Multiplicity starring Michael Keaton.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Exactly, yeah, very much like that. Well, but that was different because nice it was reference. Like the copies were they were getting worse
right.
and worse quality, and, right. and like the last one was like, couldn't even talk, yeah. which was a funny concept.
That was funny, yeah.
But so he has sent a bunch of them out, and one of them ends up getting murdered. And so now it's pretty much a classic detective story of he's got to go find out who killed him. Yeah. yeah. And but the interesting part is that when he goes and gets into it, people like think it's him that, you know, the one that was killed, even though he hadn't been there and that kind of stuff. So it's a really basic story. I mean, a basic detective story, but it was a good re-examination of Jamie Madrox, and it made him a cool character. And it set up the whole X Factor series that Peter David's been doing since then. And it's just a good, solid story. The art is by Pablo Raimondi. I don't know what else he's worked on, but it's good. I'm not crazy about the art, but I liked it. It fit the story tone, I thought, pretty well. It's very shadowy, very dark. Yeah. It also there's other characters that he introduces or reintroduces, like Rain from the new X-Men, and different characters that then go on to be in X-Factor. But most of the story, the bulk of the story, is pretty much just Jamie.
Yeah, it's almost be a prelude to X-Factor.
Yeah, I mean, it really was. I mean, it led right into X-Factor. But this one really concentrated just on Jamie and this mystery of him trying to figure out who killed him. Which in and of itself is a pretty cool little idea. So, that's it. I mean, it was just really good, real good, solid detective, funny. And like I said, it took a character that was sort of a B-list character and made him cool. And I thought that from that to, you know, what he was doing in X-Factor was, to me, the best X-book out, because it wasn't like an X book. It was just happened to be these characters that were mutants.
It was a good team book. They were just mutants.
And
poor Peter David. It seems like everything he starts working on these days ends up just getting the heart ripped out of it by an event.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, though, the whole event thing.
It's worked.
It's worked.
I haven't read
X-Factor.
Messiah Complex.
Messiah Complex has been probably the best event next to Green Lantern, mm-hmm. Sinestro Corps. And the reason is because they didn't write it like a bunch, because it's through all the X books. So you have X-Men, New X-Men, X Factor, Uncanny, Astonishing, all of them, and it's chapter by chapter by chapter. But they just wrote it as one big story. So, it's like you go from one book to the next, and it just picks right up where it left off in the last one. The voice was very consistent throughout the whole thing. It felt very much like a classic sort of, you know, Claremont X-Men story, except not nearly as melodramatic.
And a little less soap opera.
Yeah, a little less soap opera-y and more today. And, you know, and it had a little bit more development of character, especially like Cyclops was really being used well.
He was finally the leader of the team.
Yeah, finally the leader, real leader of the team. And it was kind of a mystery, and you had stuff going on. You didn't know, you know, different, not shocking things, but like, oh, wow, you know, that kind of stuff. That went out through it. And overall, I thought it was really good. I'm looking forward to the final issue of it.
Nobody probably draws any of the characters as good as me, though, huh?
Well, Bocello is doing the...
Is he doing the kids?
Because he's doing X-Men. And that's the interesting thing. All the characters are in all the books.
Yeah.
So it's not like
what does his version of my designs look like? Is it sweet?
It's pretty nice. Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
That's exciting to me, man.
That's cool.
I still like yours, I think, better. Pick up the last X-Men, and you'll see him in there, I think.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens with X-Factor after the big X shakeup here and how the titles land.
I mean, the only thing we know at this point for sure is X-Force, which is the Wetworks. Is that Pacello?
Yeah,
because it sounds like they're really reworking the entire X line, and so it'll be interesting to see if Peter David stays on X Factor if that book kind of continues in the same vein.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen.
I did see this page before.
Yeah, he's got the kids. Well, that was the cool thing too, is that all the characters have been like in every issue almost, and they've been used well. And like I said, it's been very consistent voice, pretty easy to follow story. You weren't getting lost because it was just like from one book to the next.
Has Yost been on the writing teams at all?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah,
he's the main writer.
Yeah,
okay.
On New X-Men.
Okay.
I think all the writers are still
the same
together.
Writers. Yeah,
yeah, it's the same writers on
all the books. But they all have a pretty clear path on where
Pacello's Pixie's not as cool as mine.
True enough.
Only because
you're right.
I love Pacello more than anything, but my Pixie's like 13 years old. You know what I mean?
Yeah, his rock slide's pretty.
His rock slide's pretty sweet.
Pretty bad, and his Anoli is pretty good too.
Yeah, I've only seen like a really little quick shot of Anoli.
I think near the end there's a better one. Yeah,
his Pixie looks a little too old.
His X-23 at least doesn't look like she's a 27-year-old supermodel.
Yeah, well, he drew her. Like a version of her in the Age of Apocalypse as well. Like a similar version of her, yeah.
Okay.
So I think he already had drawn her a little bit. It is, it's pretty cool to me to see
my versions
drawn by my favorite artist.
Right.
Like, that's pretty flattering. But, you know what? I mean, it's not that shocking either because when I redesigned their costume...
Well, I guess not. I thought it was
went back to the Generation X... I mean, it was really
right.
It was a line of succession where, I mean, you had Sienkiewicz, who did New Mutants and that costume, and then Chris did his version of Sienkiewicz for Generation X, and then I did my version of the both of them. Now Sienkiewicz has to come back.
Yeah, you got
to
get Sienkiewicz to come back.
Back down the line.
That'd be kind of wild.
It's very flattering, though. It's exciting.
Well, you're part of the X.
Yeah. I'm huge.
Mythos now, man. Yeah. You're
missing
your stamp on.
I miss it a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was. I am going to be. Well, I probably shouldn't say it. I'm going to be writing a little 8-page story for an X-Men annual that will be one of the new X-Men characters.
Oh, cool. Nice. So you do get. You're writing and drawing it?
Mm-hmm. I got a list of characters to choose from on who I wanted to do. And we're talking about, like, all the main X characters.
Oh, really? Like, and you picked the new X?
Most of the Gambits and the Sunfires and the...
So how's it feel to work on your first Wolverine story?
Yeah. But, no, I picked out of the whole list, I picked a new X-Men character.
I'm going to have to try and guess later to see who...
Because I said, you know what? He's mine. Oh, he.
Oh, you just cut it in half. Now I know. I think I know her anyway. I think I'll
guess. So,
let the speculation begin.
So I'm excited about that.
Cool.
Cool.
All right. And you're working on the X-Men Wizard of Oz book that's coming out. You didn't see that on our forum? Uh-huh. Somebody there's an interview with CB about his how he does the
fairy tales,
and he's doing they were talking
Spider-Man,
about
in it.
They were talking about they're doing an X-Men Wizard of Oz, and somebody posted on our forum. Because he wouldn't say who the artist was. It's like, we think we have somebody lined up, but we can't say who it is yet. And then somebody on the forum came out and was like, oh, I bet you it's Scotty because he knows CB and he loves Wizard of Oz, that kind of stuff.
No, I'm not doing the X-Men Wizard of Oz. I'm sorry.
Actually, CB's fairy tales books were pretty good.
Oh, yeah. He's still doing them. I mean, there's right now, the Avengers one's going on now or the Spider-Man one? Both?
I think it might be both.
Yeah.
And then he's doing this X-Men one and I think he's doing another one too.
That's
so
CB.
No, they're fun. Cool. They're kind of cool, but yeah, I just thought that was funny.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that I think will end top of the stack. A quick little top of the stack for y'all.
For y'all.
I'm trying to get more hillbilly with my toothpick.
Your toothpick.
Y'all, I quit smoking again.
I'm 12 days.
I'm six.
12 days
six straight. So six without. I haven't
good job,
even sniffed one.
Haven't
All right, that's top of the stack. Now, what are we going to talk about? Oh, I had a couple of things. I want to try something a little different today with the show. I wanted to throw a couple of things out to the panel and see what you guys thought. Sort of spring these hot topics out on you guys.
Crazy.
That's some raw steaks he's going to throw to the middle of the table.
Yeah. The first thing was... What I thought was interesting was that book from Boom Studios, Northwind. They had Boom had originally put it online as well, you know, the same day that they put it out for publishing. It published it and released it the same day, and it was online. And a lot of retailers, some retailers that were complaining about it and everything, and then the thing ended up selling out at Diamond, and now they announced that there's a second printing of it. And people are like, oh, well, it's sold out. But once again, we don't know.
It was delivered successfully.
It delivered successfully to the
But apparently, once it was delivered successfully, they sold enough that it's going to demand a second printing.
No, there's no way of telling that.
Yeah.
I mean, if Diamond says something sold out, then the companies go, Diamond has no more copies. We'll print more. That could also bite them in the ass. I mean, they could end up sitting on a stack of reprints.
They don't get reorders.
No way to know if there was a sell-through.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's un... We're functioning within a system that has no way of knowing.
So they'll do a reprint without really any type of reorder or people, you know, like Diamond can't tell stores we're trying to order more or anything like that?
Well, Diamond can tell if stores are going to order more. But, I mean, we're talking about a book that just came out, right?
Right.
So the initial print run was probably so low. I mean, that's the other thing.
Yeah,
it's not like
many...
when you hear these sellout things. I mean, seriously, maybe 3,000, 4,000 copies made it to stores.
Right.
That could be conceived as a sellout. I mean, I could go to Kinko's right now and print 10 copies of something, and if I bring it over here to Mark, I can officially get online and say, I sold out.
Sold out of my...
I'm doing a second printing.
And then you would put out a press release.
Yeah.
And
we'll run it on the site.
So, I mean, and that's neither here. I mean, that's not, I mean, obviously, they're just working within... The media system that we have going on, and that's fine.
But I think the point of the story is that, you know, it in theory, we hope anyway, that it may have worked, that by putting it out online, it did generate interest. People did go and buy it.
Well, part of the – I mean, it was actually – that's what they wanted, but the story became much more about what retailers were thinking.
Right.
Because
retailers were like, oh, what the hell are they doing?
Why are you marketing your book?
Right.
Why are you doing crazy marketing and fucking us?
Well, I mean, I guess it is kind of – I mean, if I was a – it would be like, okay, I sell CDs and you're a company – you know, like you're Radiohead.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the CD you can buy from us at wholesale and sell in your store. Mm-hmm. But I'm also going to put it online for free.
Right.
I mean, as a store owner, I would go, well, why would anyone buy it from me?
Well, I'm obviously going to cut orders on this because people aren't going to come in.
But that way of thinking – with that way of thinking, you would – everybody who owns any sort of retail business selling any product that you can also well-knowingly get for free. I mean,
right.
In that way of thinking, every record store that is a chain or non-chain would be shut down because – music
nobody
has been free
it.
Online,
well, I just,
and, not,
I just,
and it's not hidden. I mean, everybody knows where to get free
well,
music
Well, I just thought
online.
About, like, television.
Free television.
You know,
yeah.
Free television every day. You know, it's like DVDs sales for, you know, television
giant.
Shows
yes.
have grown. You know, it's like people watch it and buy the DVDs, mm-hmm. you know, so.
I mean, we're talking about this thing was put out for free on MySpace. It's
right.
not like you – I don't think you could download it. You had
you
to go – I mean,
it.
First of all, MySpace – Anybody go to fucking MySpace, like, you have fucking epilepsy. It's like having an epileptic seizure looking at MySpace. So it's not a great place to read a comic.
I just host my webcams there. I don't
and they're free.
They're, I mean, it annoys me a little bit that we – well, first of all, that we would even be in a situation where, as a news story, we would go to retailers and ask, hey, what do you think about this or what do you think about that? Because – it's a company trying to do – I mean
– to market their product.
Yes. We're not a place where people put out new books and sell 2 million fucking copies. Mm-hmm. If we're in a business where I'm going to be doing well to sell 4,000 copies in the fucking world,
right?
You better believe I'm going to get creative with the way I'm
trying
marketing.
To do anything. Well,
and God – and fuck anybody who tries to come along and say, I don't
putting
know.
Putting free copies of comics is nothing new. It's in my top of the stack. Yeah. Resurrection. Go to CBR and you can view the first issue for free. The only difference is that Boom did this the day it dropped.
Sure.
Same day, so it's not a month.
No, but you know what? You just made a really good point that I hadn't really thought about. Is that retail? You know, it's like, okay, I have a product I'm going to try and sell to the world.
Yes,
I'm not going to go to the smallest segment of sales, mm-hmm, and let them dictate
and see if it's okay.
If it's okay, if I market my book. Yeah, that I didn't really, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, I'm going to go to MySpace and give this away for free to try and get 100,000 people to look at it.
Yes.
And then maybe come and buy the second one.
Right. Yeah. Should I not promote my book because the 200, 300 retail stores left in the U.S. are going to be mad at me?
Right.
Or should I.
Half of them may not carry it anyway because it's Boom. It's
not like it's
Marvel.
Two copies.
Yeah, exactly.
So should I get my two copies put in your store and never to be your store, never order another version of it again, or put it online and, like what we've been saying, give my book the time? We work within a system right now where it's like I put my book out. If it doesn't sell all that it's going to sell the first month it's out.
3 months before it's out.
3 months before it's out, we never hear from the book again. Because we've lost the concept of building an audience.
Yeah.
Here, these guys are going, hey, if we put this online, there's a possibility of building an audience over time.
Right.
So, if I can let 200,000-300,000 people who will eventually find the way to my website and look at my thing, fuck yeah, I'm going to do it. And I don't care, I don't care what. Because it's such a fucked up little weird system.
Well, it's not even losing the concept of developing an audience. The business model is
we already have the audience. That's all we're getting.
Yeah. Well, it's predisposed that the audience is going to do nothing but shrink. That's how it's built in,
right?
And that's how they print stuff. And we actually there's some
printing
stories.
It's set up to fail almost for anyone. It's like mm-hmm. All right. Well, that
you had mentioned one and kind of on the same idea of getting stuff for free, that kind of stuff. You told me about this thing in Canada that
Quebecor.
No. That's the printing thing. But about the $5 tax on.
Oh, I just happened to read an article actually before we left work today. And I don't know the full details of it, but they were trying to pass legislature in Canada because of all the money that is being lost from downloads.
Yeah.
Electronic. This is about music, electronic downloads. Uh-huh. Music industry is losing all this money. Blah blah blah. In Canada, they were trying to pass some legislature where they would basically tax anyone with a internet connection. So you would be taxed an additional, say, $5 a month.
Yeah.
But for that, you could download any song you wanted. It was basically legal to download any music that was out there, to share any music.
Okay.
And they would take that $5 tax then and pay the record companies and the artists based on what music was being shared the most, like a percentage sort of thing. Because they could track that, like mm-hmm. what file, especially if it's sort of legalized.
Right.
And I just thought that was, kind of an interesting concept. Instead of like music, music industries – are losing and getting nothing from illegal downloads.
What a great
they're trying to regulate it.
They're
trying to regulate it and trying to legislate things so that it stops, which it's not going to happen.
Never stop.
At least this gives them ability to generate some revenue from it. I don't know.
You're stepping into rocky ground there because. It's the same thing. I mean, they've tried to tax or charge for emails here because mm-hmm. we were chipping into the postal service revenue.
Right.
They're still talking – now they're talking about tax on phone, like another tax on all phone calls,
right?
Each month, even the cell phones, you know, all this kind of stuff, because the big corporations are losing a little change, and they're not trying to have that. You know what I mean? So we're getting into a situation where, say, I download two songs, I'm still paying $5 versus the dude that downloads
right. Well, that's
$60 billion a month. Yeah, you know what I mean? So all of a sudden, you're taking something that should be free, and everybody is getting. I mean, if you can't regulate your product, that's your fucking. You know what I mean? Your, like, well, but that's like going back to the Wild Wild West.
I mean, it's been
like
seven or.
Hey, you know what? You rob stagecoaches. We're gonna let you rob stagecoaches as long as you give us a buck.
You know what? It's real bad. You know what I mean? Anyone that I don't, this is probably a very Midwestern thing, but anyone that has cable or satellite that. Is familiar with the Big Ten network. That's basically kind of what's going on with that, is that your cable rates are going up around here, and it's because the Big Ten network is charging the cable companies.
Yeah, I don't even want the goddamn Big Ten.
Yeah, I don't really care what, you know, well, that's up, if U of I and Wisconsin. So basically these customers are having to pay whether they're watching this or not. Right. So it's kind of the same idea.
I mean, that's because, I mean, the cable company is getting a product, trying to give it to, but this is a situation where they're basically saying, we think you're all stealing, and we're going to make you all pay.
Yeah. Well.
And that's fucked up.
The reality of it is we probably.
Everybody probably is stealing, but, I mean, it's a dangerous road to walk down.
No, it certainly is.
When your government passes a law that says you're all stealing, so you're going to pay.
But, I mean, if you market, I mean, if you went, oh, hey, you know what? If you pay an extra $5 a month, you can download any song, you can share and download any song.
But when does
music
it become
10?
See, they're not passing a law that says you get to do whatever you want. They're passing a law that says they can now charge you
whatever
they want, whenever they want, for just being online. So they make it sound like, but look!
But it's okay!
It's about all the stagecoaches you want!
And then all of a sudden,
there's a big fucking fence
there's
in front of your pasture. Yeah. Talk about, oh,
damn it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Now it's $45 a month.
Yeah, that's
I do like the fact that it's starting to be recognized that, you know what, you can't
well,
just
they
bury,
have no choice but to
recognize. Yeah, you can't bury your head in the sand and ignore it, which
it's because they're starting to lay off people. It's like every major music.
Well, it means, you know what?
Run
I just to me, it means there's going to be less and less of these fuckstick musicians out there that don't know how to perform live and can't go on tour. And
I agree
like
with that.
Days.
I said that
I
mean, in the beginning.
Where, that's
I
where
said,
music
you know,
used to live.
It will force people to produce better music. You can't put out one catchy song and charge me $15 for a CD of bullshit.
Yeah,
because I want to hear one of your catchy songs that was produced.
It'd be like keep stealing music so we can have like fucks like Akon die. Right, like make you know, like tell me that motherfucker can sing live. Whatever, he walks around with an iPod connected to everything in his life.
Well, you know, I was talking to Windorf, Dave Windorf of Monster Magnet. This has been probably a month or so ago, and we were talking about when the Radiohead thing, and I asked him his opinion on that, chit-chatted about it, and I asked him about touring. It's like, you know, really the only way for a lot of bands to make any money is to go on tour. And he's like, you know, anymore, it is still really hard to turn a nut by going on tour. It's still really cost prohibitive. It costs a lot of money to go on tour, and you have things now like gas prices have made it extremely prohibitive for a lot of bands to go.
Well,
on
I would
tour.
Think for him, is you know,
well, it's different too
because
he's.
I mean, a lot of his fan base now is in Europe and outside of the U.S. And I mean, the dollar being so weak in the U.S., having to go over there and
well, one of the things that he said is, you know, I asked him, you know, because he's going to do some Monster Magnet stuff. It looks like here in the next year, and I asked him if he does any U.S. dates, if he'll come to Chicago, and he said that absolutely because Chicago. In his opinion, anyway, is one of the last real happening live music cities in the U.S. That just the live music scene in general is very down in the country.
Hmm.
So, that was his take on it. So,
rappers, damn,
that's a problem. Rappers,
yeah.
What?
Just kidding.
So anyway,
oh well, it does bring up. I was going to say the whole Canadian thing does bring up a story that came out this week about
Quebecor,
the printing company that's. $2.5 billion in debt. They do all a lot of the printing for Marvel and DC, and
that's they print every magazine, almost any gigantic printing corporation.
But they also happen to print a lot of comics,
almost all comics.
And they're basically going out of business, and
because of the shift in the weak dollar.
American dollar is so weak compared to the Canadian dollar that the price
used to offset each other.
Right.
Yeah, now it's fucked.
But, oh, sure.
So I wonder, what that's going to do to printing and American comics here in the next year or so.
I think it's more of an issue for Quebecore than it is for comics. I mean, comics are going to get printed somewhere.
But certainly.
Something that is interesting, why Quebecore – I mean, this has turned into like this very the relationship when it's a –
Symbiotic
relationship. Yes, thank you.
Throwing out words.
We're pretty deep over here at AC, folks.
Not the brain cells loose. It's turned into, the way I understand it anyway, which is not very well, a very symbiotic relationship between Quebecor and Diamond. I mean, Diamond has one place to go get all their comics. And so, I don't know how this will shake out if different publishers.
Well, that's not true.
Really?
They don't have only one place to go get their.
They can print wherever they want. But the majority of them, and I'm sure that those are shipped. Are they shipped directly to Diamond from Quebecor?
Yeah, but I mean, that's the situation, right? It is right now, but I don't see it as being
prohibitive in the future.
I mean, the only reason that companies went to Quebecor in the first place because
it was cheap.
It was cheaper because of the offset of the worth of the dollar and the difference.
Now it's not
anymore. Now it's not. So I mean,
but this has nothing to do with their. I mean, it has a little bit to do with their being in debt, but it seems more like mismanagement. I mean, you don't get $2 billion in debt
because the dollar changes.
Billion. I mean, I'm sure it has some effect to it, but.
Yeah.
There's something else.
Yeah, but obviously, I mean, it's a story for comics, but I mean, we are probably the blip in their printing schedule.
Right. They print like Time.
Yeah. We're talking about the big magazines of the world.
Right.
But I don't.
It's got to be affecting them too. But it will be interesting to see if any of that printing comes back across the border.
Yeah. Brenner's a big printer in Texas. That prints. Quality, and I know Image at some point. I think Image did some printing through Brenner. There are printers in America.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
And I think Marvel is already using some printers in like Korea and other places anyway.
Yeah.
Smaller, stuff. But yeah, I mean, I doubt that we'll see any.
I print my stuff on the moon.
Well, it's because it's awesome.
Sweet. Yeah. The ink floats.
All right. What else we got in the news? Oh, here. I wanted to talk about the naked Wonder Woman controversy that's hit the interweb.
The painted Wonder Woman?
Yeah. For those of you who may not know, because I didn't know until I happened to run across a post on it, but in February.
Tragedy has struck.
Yes. In February's issue of Playboy, there's a woman on the cover. What's her name?
Naked Bitch.
Tiffany Fallon. Okay. Tiffany Fallon. She's a reality TV person. I think she was on like that Donald Trump show for a little.
The Paris Hilton?
She has a great ass.
Yeah, she was on that.
She has a great ass.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Fantastic.
Fantastic ass.
But anyway, she's on the cover of Playboy and inside with a painted on Wonder Woman kind of like costume, and the inside of the issue trumpets her up to be a
Wonder Woman for a new age.
Yeah, Wonder Woman for a new age kind of thing. And people around the internet have taken offense to this, saying that first, it's like you shouldn't show a naked Wonder Woman.
We shouldn't
Woman.
Objectify women, comic book women.
And,
that's crazy talk.
And then the other thing is that, why this woman would be trumpeted as the Wonder Woman for a new age. I mean, feminists obviously have always – I mean, it goes – Gloria Steinem and Wonder Woman have a history together. I mean, she's – but –
Do these motherfuckers – do the people that are bitching, do they know that this is not the issue one of Playboy?
This is
not the first issue of this magazine.
Well, that's the weird thing. It's like it's Playboy, so of course – I mean, I don't understand that part of it. I guess I do understand
and do people not
a little bit.
Yeah, but that, why would they say that she's the new Wonder Woman of New York? Do you know how many fucking taglines are released every day of some generic this guy is the new blah, 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 blah.
I'll actually read what it says. The painted lady on our cover is Playmate of the Year 2005's Tiffany Fallon, but to usher you into the cover story, Sex in America, We recast her as that champion of truth, justice, and American sensuality, Wonder Woman.
Not the American way, but American sensuality.
Tiffany, a modern-day Linda Carter, has been honing her TV skills. She appeared on The Simple Life with Paris Hilton, became a weekly co-host for IFL's Battleground, and accompanied her country music star husband, Joe Don Rooney, to numerous award shows.
I spent a lot of time with Linda Carter as a kid, and she is no Linda Carter.
She is no Linda Carter, and I think that's one of the other things that people had sort of taken offense with, is that Linda Carter is a straight-up feminist. Very strong.
Linda Carter got paid to play a motherfucking role.
Well, no,
people
I'm saying
stop digging deeper than this shit is. Wonder Woman is a product. She is not a fucking entity. She is fake.
Well, she's an entity in some way. She's an iconic figure.
She's an iconic figure, but people in comics got to start realizing that she exists in a wholly different way to the regular public. The same way Superman does, the same way Batman does.
What do you mean?
I'm joking. What do you mean? She doesn't fly through the windows?
You are melting my world.
I'm just saying. Well, no, but I think that's part of the...
To my dad, he is aware of Wonder Woman because of a TV show that came on and because he will see things... It's no different than seeing the fucking Sprite logo or something that you see every day or the Budweiser logo or the Budweiser
or the Taco Bell dog.
Yes. It's the same thing to the majority of America.
Sure. Right.
So when you paint this on a girl that is going to be seen by more than the 200,000 comic book fans, people are going to be like, oh – what was that show back in the 70s?
Linda Carter.
With Linda Carter. Remember? Oh, she was
Charlie's
hot.
Angels? No, yeah. No, not Charlie's Angels.
It's just wild. It is fucking wild that people...
The only people that are going to get really bent out of shape about this are comic book fans. And a very small segment of comic book fans. I'm not saying it's wrong or right, but I think we need to kind of step back and look at who is really going to be miffed off about this.
The feminist thing to me is I mean, I understand there's feminists in the world, and I'm not at all trying to say people should not stand up for what they believe in. But it falls into the war scenario, right? We're gonna go stop evil over here, but I know we get our oil from there, but we're not gonna go stop evil ever. It's like you can't be a fucking backseat feminist, right? I mean, and be like, well, I'm into comics, and oh my god, there's a Wonder Woman. I am totally on this feminist story.
Right.
Like I said, this is not the first issue of Playboy. So if that, I want to see somebody bitching about Playboy once a month, like every time an issue hits the stands. I want to see that same person
that
online
Playboy?
On a message board.
Well, that battle's already been lost, I guess. So it's like you can't win that one.
Well, and then I want them to take again. I want somebody to the first two things. Anybody who bitches, I want you to email Around Comics your fucking browser history with unedited. Yeah. And I swear to God, if there's a porno site on there, you get punched in the mouth. Because I'm sure that girl with getting shit blasted all over her face, that's real feminista.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. All right? And then second, I want you to take the fucking cover of this Playboy, go down to your local comic book shop, and walk along the stand and do a fucking side-by-side comparison. And if you tell me that the cover of this Playboy magazine...
It's not even half as sexual as the shit you see on the stand.
That's what I'm saying. Walk up and down the aisles, motherfuckers.
Are you guys starting to see that we're kind of in this...
Kind of retarded?
Well, we're kind of in this 4 or 5 month cycle where there just seems to be a story like this. How long ago was it the Mary Jane doing laundry statue?
Yeah. It's well, I think it's a small group of people that... are looking to promote their own agenda of things. But I think a lot of times it comes off as attacking things frivolously. And I guess you can't ever let your guard down if you're trying to defend something like feminism. But at the same time,
the advice would be ignore it and it will go away.
Well, that's the thing. I didn't know this even existed until I happened to see it on a blog about comic books about a woman complaining about it. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that I don't read Playboy. Right. Would never have even seen it.
Yeah.
And now it's gotten way more play than it probably ever would have. Most people probably wouldn't even have known it happened.
I'd say that this will probably turn into Playboy's biggest selling issue in quite a long time. There just aren't that many comic fans out there.
And the other thing is, too, it's like Wonder Woman as an iconic figure. I mean, people forget that Wonder Woman was created by a fetishist that dug the idea of binding women and spanking them and lived with
two chicks, his wife and his mistress.
And it's not like she was created as this, you know, virtue, this statue.
Yeah, you know, no dude sat in a room and went, man, I'm totally going to
create a feminist character of power. And no, it had nothing to do with that.
And I don't want to – this isn't relegated to only comic book fans, because music fans do this, movie fans do this. People obviously we see musicians all the time that are like, look, I'm not your fucking role model. I mean, sports athletes. We've got to get – for some reason in this country, we find things that we look up to and like so much that we try to –
canonize it.
Yeah, everybody takes it and turns it into something that this is mine and this is what it is. But really, it's just a fucking product. It's these are just products. You know what I mean? Nobody is sitting around creating stuff going, oh, I'm going to totally create the new, like, the thing,
the icon,
this stands for something and people will use this and fight, walk on and fight for this. It's a fucking product. It was a product when it was created. It's a product now. It'll be a product tomorrow when
not Black Panther.
No, that's for real. That's some for real shit. I guess we do need to make an exception. Black Panther and fucking Buffy. That's real.
Yeah, Buffy.
Well, I mean, I think what you're talking about, and it's something that I think fans just need to be aware of. There is a fine line between fandom and taking ownership of something that you don't own. And
I mean, that's just, I mean, we see that so much. It's like companies treat these characters like what they are. Yes. They are products to sell. They're trying to sell books, fans treat them like they are family, like they are, you know, their children. And I understand that and appreciate it to some degree, but at some point you have to, you know, I guess I could understand it more if it was like my kids. Right. You know, if you're 10, 12 years old and, you know, it's like, and that's probably the only thing I can see from this is like, if my daughter was a big Wonder Woman fan, I wouldn't want her to see this depiction of Wonder Woman.
No, but you
but
would,
I wouldn't
you
want
would
her
also
to see
go,
the depiction.
You would say, I wouldn't want my daughter to see this, but at the same time, Playboy's not made to be seen by.
Exactly. My daughter's not going
to come in. You wouldn't say they shouldn't make this.
No, not at all. Of course not. I was going to say, at the same time, I don't know that I would want my daughter to see the Wonder Woman
on the
shelves.
Yeah.
The covers and the way that they depict Wonder Woman on the shelves. I mean,
Seen an Adam Hughes Wonder Woman cover?
Yeah.
Jesus.
I mean, it's definitely more explicit than the cover of this Playboy.
Yeah. I mean, even the cover, you don't actually, I mean,
I didn't even realize it was painted on until I read that it was painted. I just went, it was kind of spandex looking. Yeah. I didn't even realize it. You know, I was like, oh, okay, it's painted on, but it's not like. Yeah, I mean,
I would tell these people they need a hobby, but I see what they do with their hobbies. Right? They go insane with them and turn into fucking revolutionists.
Maybe they need a job. Maybe they need a job.
Yeah, drop your hobby and get a
less
fucking
hobbies.
Job.
Fewer hobbies.
Get a part-time job.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
All right. All right, that's
Macworld this week.
Macworld, yeah, they came out. Scotty's got some new toys he wants to buy from Apple.
Scotty wants an Air,
a new Mac Air.
What do you?
Ooh, they're pretty badass.
Those things are thin.
How are things shaking out with your? You have an Apple TV.
Yeah.
Now, have you figured out what there's like some upgrade you have to maybe buy, and then you can watch in
HD.
True HD, that kind of stuff?
I don't know.
I think they announced that now there's like a
upgrade
for Apple TV where you can.
Yeah, that was the only downside is their online content was very, you know, for big flat screens, it wasn't the best content,
it was
the best quality.
Now they're going to be offering a rental of HD stuff.
Yeah. I checked some of the prices and older movies. I don't know if they put a date to it, if it's over a year since it's been released on DVD or whatever. $2.99 for older movies, $3.99 for newer releases. You can, once you rent it, you have 30 days to start watching it, and once you start watching it, you have 24 hours to conclude it before it locks out. That's how I understand it.
See, that seems a little weird. I mean, the 24 hours to have to watch it.
Because mm-hmm. once you start playing it.
Well, what if like I got to stop it halfway through and then I don't come back for 2 days?
Well, you're kind of screwed.
That seems like kind of bullshit. I should get it. I mean, now if I rent a movie, I get 5 days before I have to return it. I'm paying the same, basically. And I actually
But tomorrow when it's negative 14 degrees and you don't want to schlep your ass to a Blockbuster.
That's why I got Netflix.
That's why you got Netflix.
And on demand on Comcast.
Yeah. The HD rentals I think are even going to be a little bit more. I think they're going to be $4.99, $5.99.
Bastards.
So it's like $5 or $6 for the HD rentals. And I believe that is only available through
Apple
TV.
Let's get Dave Wachter on here to complain about HD.
Nah. I tell you what, I did, speaking of Netflix, I got Planet Earth in this week. And anyone with an HD TV and any sort of HD or Blu-ray player, get Planet Earth.
Planet Earth.
It's freaking awesome.
Oh, it's fucking amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. It is awesome. There's not much to talk about besides it just looks freaking amazing.
You see shit you won't see anywhere else.
It's great.
I watched 6 hours of Bad Western this week. The Comanche Moon aired on CBS, which was the follow-up.
The final story.
No, it's not. No. Well, for those who don't know, back in the 80s, CBS did a six-hour miniseries called Lonesome Dove, and it was based on the book by Larry McMurtry, Lonesome Dove, and it was about these two retired Texas Rangers who are like living on a ranch, and they decide to go on like one last adventure. And it was starring Tommy Lee Jones and Robert Duvall. Rick Schroeder was in it, and it was awesome. It was one of my favorite westerns. I watch it like once a year. It's phenomenal. Comanche Moon was the first book in the series from Lonesome Dove. There's like five of them. It's actually the second one. And it's a story of the same characters, Gus McCrae, played by Robert Duvall. But they're younger. They're probably like 30s in Comanche Moon. And so they just released The Comanche Moon on CBS this last week, and Steve Zahn played Robert Duvall's character, Gus McCrae, a younger Gus McCrae, and the guy's last name is Urban, and he played Tommy Lee Jones' character. But it was awful, really. It was really bad. I mean, you can't compare. I mean, when you have
Val Kilmer?
Val Kilmer was in it. When you have a cast like Tommy Lee Jones and Robert Duvall, Those two guys, yeah, it's really hard to do. So to try and recapture that with guys now, and it was not good, but still.
It seems like the writing was probably more the problem
yeah,
than the actors?
The acting was bad. Like, I don't think first off, like any Indian that you've seen in a movie or TV for the last decade was in it.
Like an American.
Native American, anybody that has any actor who's a Native American was in it.
Right.
But I don't think I've seen worse accents, like either Native American accents or Mexican accents, from Native Americans or Mexicans. I mean, these people are Mexican or are Native American and can't fake an accent of their own culture. I couldn't get that. They were awful, just horrible.
They probably could have been better, but the time that spent preparing for the roles was spent jerking off to Wonder Woman Playboy covers.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But I will say Steve Zahn was phenomenal. He was the only part
As
in
always.
It. He did the best sort of impersonation of Robert Duvall.
Without
doing a caricature. He just did enough of the little things that Robert Duvall does when he's acting, when he's speaking, the way he says things, the way he uses his hands when he talks. He just did enough of that to really pull it off, and that was the only part of it that was good. Actually, the last, because it was in 2 hour increments, there was three 2 hour. The last 2 hours were okay, and because it was mostly him, and he was great, but the rest of the show was awful, and I felt bad because. But that I watched that this week, and I just had to give Steve Zahn some credit,
some props.
Yeah, he's awesome. He is awesome.
He
is good, but
pretty sweet.
Anything?
Steve Zahn's pretty sweet.
Steve Zahn's pretty sweet. He is pretty sweet. All right. We got anything else on our minds this week that we did? Anything? Nothing? Watch anything? Read anything?
Watch The Wire.
The fourth
season of The Wire.
Which is awesome.
Fucking amazing.
That was one of my favorite seasons of The Wire.
It was really
the kids and the school.
The kids,
I'm still bummed about Mikey.
The child acting in that show is so good.
It's just amazing. Yeah. And Snoop, I found out today, Snoop, the like tomboy girl.
Yeah.
I found out today she spent a lot of years in prison.
Yeah,
and, and wrote a book when she got out of prison.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wrote a was author of basically her story.
No kidding.
And yeah, she's from Baltimore, so like she's actually lives in the city that the show takes place in.
I watched they had like before the fifth season started on HBO, they had a little thing like a half hour
making
of
type thing.
Yeah, kind of, and they just interviewed a lot of the actors and everything, and they kept asking – like one of the things they asked and then they would go to each of the people and get their answer was, you know, who's your favorite character? And like 90% of them, it was all Snoop.
Snoop.
And everybody was like, because she's real. Because that's the street. She is from
– I hate that character, and I mean that in the best way. I hate – every time I see her, it's like, ooh, I hate her. And it's – yeah, because she's so
convincing. I mean like going to school in the South – in Tennessee, there were, you know, questionable neighborhood. I mean, in South is already a slightly, you know, Bristol's already was a slightly poor city in the first place. But you do watch, like watching that whole show sometimes, you're just like, Jesus Christ. You're like, this is the most real I've ever seen this kind of subject matter approach.
Dealt with, yeah.
In the way of, you never feel like these are bad. They do bad shit. But just like a lot of times in real life, they're not – it's not like they're bad people. It's just
– yeah, they're not evil.
Here's the fucking situation they're in, right? Yeah. I mean – and it's not like they were just dropped in yesterday. I mean this is the situation that they've been in from Jump Street. And the Snoop character to me is like – like I think that at some point everybody's known somebody like that where it's like – to that point where you're just like, fuck, they, you know, like, they're crazy, but look at, you know, just like.
Right. I can't blame them.
Well, it's not even you can't blame them. It's just they're normal. You could probably be friends with them.
Right.
I mean, like, but
crazy
they're fucking
ass,
evil.
Crazy
like,
fucking
yeah.
people, yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, Bodhi was one of my favorite characters in the series. And season four, and I don't want to spoil anything. Season four was a hard season for old Boat.
Yeah.
But, well, going back to Snoop, one of the other things that was funny from that little documentary was, I don't know if you remember, but when her character first showed up in season three, there's a scene on a motorcycle when she's on the back and they do a drive-by.
Mm-hmm.
And she's wearing a dress. And she said that was the first time she had ever worn a dress
in
her life was that scene. She had never worn a dress before.
Wow. it's hilarious because there's times where you're just like – After I watched the season and I started looking on YouTube and I found that interview, I went, okay. Because at times I was like, this bitch is a great actor. Because her voice.
She's so, yeah.
I mean, she was so convincing because, I mean, she has the, you know, it's not and then you realize, oh, it's not an actor doing street speak.
Right.
That's just the way she fucks. And then I saw interviews with her talking about her book and book club interviews with authors and stuff. And she just. That's her. Yeah, she's not putting on a goddamn thing for that show. Yeah.
And do not give this person a bad review. You will fucking regret it.
It really is. What a great fucking show. I mean,
it is. And we talked about that. We've talked about this a few times. Yeah. But it's like you've never seen a show deal with that type of subject matter in such a way where you know, there are no good guys. There are no bad guys.
It doesn't vilify. I mean, obviously, it does say like obviously they're doing illegal shit. And they're doing bad shit, but it's not going, they're the evil villains, we're the heroes.
We're the good guys. It's not, you know.
Because most of the time.
This is the situation, and this is why.
The drug side of things, they're killing people, but you hate the fucking politicians.
Sure. Just as
and
much.
And the cops almost more.
Yeah.
Because of how fucking, at least the gangsters are real. They're like, this is what we do. We're not trying to survive.
We're trying to make a living.
Yeah, the cops and the commissioners and the fucking mayors and the whole
of it's all politics
and the school system. Fucking A. Well, you want to talk about what pisses you off?
That's what makes if they were doing the street side of it very convincingly, but the more the city politics side of it was okay. It would be a really good show, but it's a great show because. The city politics and the police, the school systems is done so well, it's just every aspect of the show is done so well.
And I absolutely love how they continually just show you how it's all the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The life you know, the drug dealing life, the corner kids, and the cops, and the politicians. And the it's all a reflection. The school, it's all a reflection of each other.
Society.
Yeah, I mean, and it's all the same in its own way, but there's no real – I mean, the fine line is so fucking fine.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think you said when we were talking about earlier today, it's the best show, maybe ever on television. It's
just amazing. I mean, I've never – in season four of The Wire, hardly anything happens. I mean, hardly anything major.
As far as like a plot goes.
A major events. The other seasons had big cases, and they were after like a kingpin, and big things happened.
There was resolution the fourth on that
season,
last episode.
Yeah, the fourth season, it goes to show how strong the show is in that nothing really happens. It's almost like a giant setup for another season, but it just shows how – I couldn't take my eyes off of it. There was one night where I went two nights ago, I went to bed at 5 in the morning because I couldn't, I swear to God, I could not stop watching. I thought, one more. And then it's like, oh my God, this is so good, you know.
We were talking about on the way up, they're in their last season now, and I asked Sal, it's like, I wonder how they're gonna tie up all these storylines. And
they won't.
And I say, I don't think they will because
– there won't be an ending because it's real life.
Yeah. And life doesn't end. It doesn't wrap up in a bow. It doesn't
It's open-ended.
Yeah.
Somebody comes along and takes the place of – but that's why I like – I mean, motherfuckers die on that show, and you don't see it coming. It's not like, ooh, life is crazy, and the person who dies, it's always at the end of some big long chain of events.
No. It's like, hey, boom.
Hey, you heard that? It's a clack, clack, and then they're fucking dead.
Well, that guy that's been around for three seasons dies in like the middle of an episode. That's not the end of the episode. Right. It's like that is a huge – event that's going to change the series, and it just happens in the course of an episode, and you kind of see it coming, but you still don't quite think it will.
I'm gonna miss that show though. That's for sure. Because
I was really surprised at the fourth season because McNulty's hardly in it at all.
Yeah, he's
which is weird. But yet, even though he's not in it, they powerfully changed his character.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So even, you know, he'd be in the show for a minute an episode, but you still understood
where he went.
It's a good fucking – I mean, to me
– it's so well written.
It's hands down one of the best shows. I mean, and I could see why a lot of people might stray from it because it suffers from being a show that seemingly
– is going to be about –
is like CSI or you know, NYPD Blue because all of a sudden it's just another – it's HBO's cop show. Mm-hmm. And it is – it's so not that it's – I think – because I think you had mentioned it has never won an Emmy.
But yeah.
It's never won anything.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
And I think that may be the problem is that
– people assume it's one thing.
Because how many you talk about like I've never seen a group of more flawless actors.
Oh, yeah.
The writing is impeccable. I mean everything about it is incredible.
David Simon? Is that
– yeah. David Simon is the creator. And he was a journalist in Baltimore for years.
Some great documentaries.
You guys ever been to Baltimore?
No, I've never been there. Well, no, that's not true. I was in Baltimore Airport for about 2 hours, but I never. And that was a shithole.
It was a shithole.
But I've never actually been in the city of Baltimore at all.
Yeah,
I've heard it's pretty. Pretty goddamn bad, though.
It's edgy.
Yeah.
Has a certain charm to it.
I could have been to the convention a few times, but one time I went and we actually got out and went
into the city.
And we were pretty, you know, just like a neighborhood festival, and it was pretty good. And then trying to get back, we were pretty far away from the convention center.
Went through the Western.
Wow, man. It was not like, you were like, this is, and why we live in Chicago. I mean, you know. And I was still like, holy shit. Yeah. This is some fucking scary shit. Just the, because Chicago still has, there seems to always be a thriving nightlife. And I'm not saying nightlife is in clubs, but there's neighborhood pubs everywhere. And when you have pubs, you have people on the street. And that gives you a sense of neighborhood and safety.
Right.
Because there's, again, it's not clubs. It's not where, you know, just a bunch of,
you know.
No,
it's just sort of activity. There's people out.
And like people who don't know, in Chicago, when you have a neighborhood pub, it does feel like, that's my neighbor.
Right.
Because it's a neighborhood place.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago's like one big neighborhood.
Yeah, it's really a big, giant small town.
Yeah.
It's broken. It is a city of neighborhoods.
Yeah. Everywhere you go, I mean, just about, it's like – like you said, it feels very neighborhood, very small town kind of feel, even though it's this big city.
Yeah.
Because it's all these little neighborhoods.
But Baltimore, not so much?
Not so. Well, here's the other problem is like all these other cities, like we kind of benefit from being so large, I believe, because we can break into neighborhoods and the neighborhood, then the community, each neighborhood has their community directors and, you know, it's kind of like little small towns.
Right.
Other cities that aren't as large, I think, I mean, you have downtown areas that are just shitholes, you know what I mean? So they're not like our downtown. Like our downtown, you go down there and it's like, parks. Oh my God, it's like art galleries and parks and events and it's beautiful. Shopping.
A giant Ferris wheel.
Yeah, I mean, like you go to fucking Los Angeles and go to their downtown.
Right.
It's like fucking, well, going into RoboCop all of a sudden.
I grew up in and around
Detroit.
St. Louis.
Jesus Christ.
So, yeah. Well, St. Louis is fucked. Oh. Fuck St. Louis, man.
Hey. St. Louis has a downtown that closes up like a suitcase at 5 o'clock.
3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. Better get out.
It's almost dark. Yeah. It's almost dusk. I gotta go.
I swear to God, you'll see motherfuckers on each end of town with six shooters.
If there's not a baseball or a hockey game downtown at night, there's tumbleweed.
Which you guys ever been even to worse right now in St. Louis because of all the construction they were doing on the new stadium or like rebuilding the stadium. So it's still like not only is it all shady and ghetto at downtown St. Louis, now it's all fucking even worse because it's all construction, like dirt and cinder blocks and cranes.
You guys ever been to Detroit?
I drove through there on the way to Canada.
Oh man, Detroit's bad. Not as bad. I mean, it was worse. Probably 10 years ago, but
right.
Still fucked.
Sorry to everybody who lives in the towns that were different.
Yeah, there were towns, but it's...
Because don't get me wrong, there are parts of Chicago that are fucking Beirut as well.
The difference between Chicago, and we talk about the city a lot on here, but the difference between Chicago and a lot of other U.S. cities is that the city here is still very residential. And you get into a lot of other cities. No one lives in St. Louis. The population of St. Louis is like 100,000.
Yeah, the suburbs, yeah.
There's 3.1 million people live in the suburbs.
Right.
100,000 people live in St. Louis.
Yeah, we have like 3-4 million?
Three and a half million in the city.
Proper,
yeah. And then what, eight?
Oh, yeah,
nine in the
suburbs, something like that.
Yeah, it's really like, you know, different cities that are kind of stuck together. So.
Yeah, we don't mean to rip on everybody's city.
No, yeah, I mean, if I go to a city and it's a fucking scuzz bucket shithole, I'm going to tell you about it.
How's Bristol, huh?
Bristol? Oh, boy. Bucktown, that's what we called it.
Yeah, that was a Maytag town.
Fucking Bucktown, boy.
I almost moved to Bristol.
Bristol, Tennessee?
Yeah, my dad.
Well, it's half and half. We had a state street. Half the street was Tennessee, half the street was Virginia.
Yep. Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. It was always good skating because if cops would come on one end, we'd skate across the street and be like, fuck you! And we're free and clear.
Well, my dad worked for Maytag. And there was a...
Was it Maytag? No.
It was Maytag Point. Or a Magic Chef.
No, it's... what's...
Hoover.
Not Hoover. What's another vacuum? Electrolux or...
Electrolux? That's an old vacuum company.
Yeah, but Electrolux is there. I think that's the one.
Yeah, there was a Maytag company was there. And we almost went. We could have gone to high school together.
Right? How old are you?
34.
Yeah, no, we wouldn't have went to high school together.
Just call me old. Yeah. But hey, speaking of cities that I want to go to, you're heading out Seattle way in May?
I guess.
You don't know.
I don't know what it is.
I think you're signed up to go to Emerald City.
Yeah,
I'm gonna try and make it this year. So.
Are you going out?
I'm gonna try to.
I'm going with you. Can I stay in your room?
Yeah. No.
Well,
I don't let people stay in my room.
Are you doing New York in April?
No.
Okay. I think I'm the only one that's going.
I'm going to Emerald City because they're flying me out, and I've never been to Seattle. And Jim, the guy who's putting on, is really cool with me, and I've known him for a while. But I'm still laying off cons for a while. I'm just not ready. I'm not ready, man. I'm just not ready.
Well, you got to actually start working on some comics again sooner.
No,
later.
I am. This past couple weeks have been pretty hardcore as far as designs and working on designs. Yeah.
When do you think you'll be able to announce what you're working on next?
Probably within this month. Like by the end of February, everybody should know.
Cool.
Yeah, it's just been a matter of me getting some designs stuff together and
sweet. Cool. Yeah, which I've seen some of. You were nice enough to show me some of the stuff.
Pretty awesome.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah. People are going to be so... It's been a big build-up to like this mysterious next project. People are going to be so fucking let down when they realize what it is.
Ultimate Ghostbusters.
What?
Yeah.
Howard the Duck?
Yeah. No spandex. I'll just say that. Now
no spandex.
Everybody's walking away right now.
Oh, fuck that shit. Yeah.
There are powers.
Yeah.
There's some powers involved in it.
Crazy
some magic.
Magic?
Maybe.
Maybe some...
Animals.
You guys are going to give it away. Stop.
Yeah, I'm not saying up. Shit. It's not.
No superheroes.
I don't even know what it is. I just.
He just saw designs for it.
It could be anything.
Yeah. Why is there a tranny in your book?
Well, I assumed that was going to happen. All right. Well, that's another episode, I think.
Yay.
Another one in the books.
169.
Like to remind everyone they can join our Friends of the Program Friend of the Program. I don't know.
That's all right. The new title of the show.
No.
Friends of the Program.
Go to Around Comics where you can download and print out our LCS Challenge flyer. Ask your comic shop manager or owner if they will display it in their store. If they do, send us an email and we'll mention you and the store on the show as well as post it on our site.
Nobody's done that in a while.
Yeah, nobody has. Maybe we should just stop mentioning it. Become a friend of the program today. I think maybe we got everybody.
Yeah.
There's only like five comic
shops. Every shop in the world.
There's only like six, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we got them all.
Seven and a half.
I think we might have that many.
And
so. But now that Boone put that thing on MySpace, there'll probably be three left. Probably close them all up. I mean, Boone put out a free copy of a
book nobody was going to read.
Close shop, folks. Let's go home. It's all done.
Well, Scotty,
goddamn Boone.
Usually this is where we do the iTunes thing, but I got blueballed this week.
Oh, no reviews this week.
No reviews?
I got blueballed.
Wow.
Postseason. You know, not this week. Now they all, you know why? Playboy. They don't need to come molest you, boy. They can stick their cocks in Wonder Woman.
Oh, God.
So go leave an iTunes review. Chris is feeling neglected.
This episode is sponsored by Instock. InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection, the originals, to Around Comics listeners for an amazing 35% off the cover price. Get your copy today for only $11.69 for the soft cover. Or $16.22 for the hardcover. Check out the Eisner-winning graphic novel by Dave Gibbons. And then listen to our discussion
Dave Gibbons.
In early February. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. It's your source for just about anything you could want comics-wise. And remember that all orders over $50 ship for free.
And we are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, go to heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809 and drop a couple bucks their way.
And we'll be back again on Monday with whom? Who's going to be here Monday?
Some goon,
Eric Powell.
Yes,
we talked to Eric Powell. How was Mr. Powell doing?
He was shopping. Whenever I called him,
so he really, you know, took it serious. Yeah, he really focused on it.
He was great.
What was he buying?
I think he's at the grocery store.
He's buying beer
at the grocery store.
Sure. He was
very
fun guy. You get to hear all about his work on Chinatown and
I should mention. If you turn me on to those Dark Horse interview videos.
Are those funny or
if you
what?
Go to the goon.com, I think it's the goon.com.
The goon.com, yeah.
They did a bunch like a fake kind of interviews with him, video ones on Dark Horse, and it's pretty funny. They were pretty, it's just him being super hillbilly.
Oh yeah. I think he has a shotgun in every scene.
Yeah.
And then the Goon movie mock movie panel in San Diego was also funny. That was the last one there. So anyway, you get to hear all about that on Monday.
All right. Well, I would like to thank everyone for joining us today, or well, just you guys, really.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark. Thanks, guys, and thanks to Mark for hosting us as always. Stay warm. It's gonna be freezing ass cold here soon, and that's about it. So.
Bye.
In the meantime,
bye.
We'll be everywhere
and around
comics.
Naked Wonder Woman.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. All content of this episode is the sole property of Around Comics. Around Comics is a pipe dream production. Copyright 2008. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same, bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Baby, love you one more time.